Today on the LA Food Podcast, I'm your host, Lucas Ervodio, apologizing for my nasally voice, but alas, even the best podcasters in the world get sick sometimes. Thankfully, today's episode is, in many ways, about healing, specifically the power of cannabis and food to heal us and build community. Tomorrow's 420, dear listener, so it felt appropriate to invite a chef who's really made a name for herself by embracing cannabis in her cooking. Wendy Zhang is an award-winning chef known around town and beyond for hosting cannabis-infused pop-ups, supper clubs, and events. Make no mistake, we're not talking about stoner food here, no shade to stoner culture. Rather, Wendy's all about leaning into market-driven ingredients in the name of building community and destigmatizing recreational cannabis use. What I found really interesting, dear listener, was to learn about Wendy's upbringing in Chengdu and how that influenced her love for cooking and her eventual desire to reclaim cannabis as a form of Eastern plant medicine that's actually been utilized for thousands of years. We talk about how she approaches utilizing cannabis in her cooking, why she feels so passionately about destigmatizing the plant, and even what negative side effects have been ailing the industry since legalization took place and capitalism entered the chat. Finally, did you know that there's a cannabis-tinged spinoff of Chopped on Discovery Plus? And that Wendy actually won the first ever edition? Well, you do now, and trust me, you're gonna wanna hear more. By the way, we're not covering any news on the pod this week. Yes, it's because your boy is sick, but also because it was a slow news week. In fact, I'll summarize it like this. Dave Chang apologized for Chili Crunch Gate, but it fell flat. Every outlet in town reported on the food at Coachella, and LA Taco is doing better, but still needs our help. Without further ado, dear listener, let's chow down. The LA Food Podcast is brought to you by House of Macadamias. Dear listener, do you have a favorite nut? Here's why I've happily given that title over to the macadamia. First, it's chock full of nutritional benefits, including one of the best omega 6 to 3 ratios in the nut game, 8 times better than pistachios and 20 times better than cashews. Cashew? More like cash-ew. Second, it's super versatile. You can have them as a snack. You can find tons of applications to include them in your cooking. You can even use the oil for cooking, in addition to using it for skin and health purposes. If you want to get in on the macadamia game, head to the LA Food Pod page on houseofmacadamias.com to access my curated list of macadamia products. We've got extra virgin cold-pressed macadamia oil, savory macadamia snack packs, and salted or unsalted macadamia nut butter. All great for snacking, all great for cooking. The best part is, when you buy an LA Food Pod bundle on houseofmacadamias.com, you'll instantly get a free multi-pack of macadamia snack bars featuring flavors like chocolate, white chocolate, and coconut white chocolate. And if you subscribe to our bundle, you get a 15% discount on all of it. And don't worry, you can pause, cancel, or adjust the subscription at any time. So what are you waiting for? Head to www.houseofmacadamias.com/pages/LA-foods and go nuts. I am delighted to welcome to the podcast today the chef and owner of Drizzle Catering, Wendy Zhang. Wendy, how you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh my God. Thank you for joining us. Wendy, where are you calling us from today?
I'm actually calling you from my home in Northeast Los Angeles. I'm actually on the property where me and my husband have built a farm to table with cannabis concept. So that's why you see so much greenery and, you know, very vibey. We really try to make it a fun, welcoming vibe for folks who are coming to gatherings here.
God, I feel at peace just looking at your background already. Northeast Los Angeles, that's actually a place that's near and dear to my heart as well. That's where I'm located, generally speaking. What are some of your favorite, dining haunts in the neighborhood?
Oh, man. Recently, there's been a lot of really cool restaurants and coffee shops and They all kind of open. I love walking my dogs down to Barra Santos, that new, Portuguese tapas place. They have really good, nice wines and aperitifs and excellent jamón. And there's also a pizza place, Shen's, right next door. So you can do both. And there's also an excellent coffee shop right across the street and next to them, Loqua. They make this amazing like mascarpone cream coffee drink. It's so, so good. And even the Cafe 1802 across the street. There's just so many cute places. I'm really, into a lot of the new things that's coming to the neighborhood.
Yeah, that pocket of Northeast Los Angeles really experiencing a lot of change. I mean, you talk about Shin's Pizza. I have messed around with Shin's Pizza since it's been alive. I'm actually a huge fan, so very jealous that it's so close to you. Look, we're talking today in part because the upcoming holiday is 420. So I gotta ask, how are you celebrating 420? And the sort of like parallel question to that is, do you have anything planned with Drizzle?
So not so much through Drizzle, which is my catering business, but more so with just the chef community that I met through Chop 420. So ever since I competed on the show, I became friends with a lot of the other folks, on the show, because the folks who cook with cannabis, it's like, there's a lot of people doing it, but once you start to get into it, the community is actually pretty small too. So when we all met, we were like, wow, you're also doing this exploration similar to me, but doing it in your totally unique way. So it was just really beautiful how organically all those friendships formed. So every year since the inaugural year, we've been getting together, like the different chefs fly in from, different parts of the country, and we get together to do a tasting menu where everyone showcases one or two different dishes. So you get to experience, the guests get to experience kind of a plethora of ways that chefs are incorporating cannabis into their cuisine. But we all, do extensive planning too, so that it feels cohesive with everybody's different styles.
Dope. That's like the most like intense potluck I've ever heard of. Do you guys like tend to compete with one another? Maybe not overtly, but like subconsciously?
Maybe there is a healthy level of, I wouldn't say competition, but more of like complementing each other, making sure that all of our individual dishes are contributing to that broader experience together, making sure that things feel elevated and special and unique. Because when you're with your peers that you also really respect, you want to impress them too. So I think there's definitely that level of like, let me do my best game. But once we start cooking, it's very, very collaborative. And, I think it speaks volume to just the kind of people who are in cannabis, the people who are into the plant medicine and cooking with it. Everyone's just so, so collaborative. Everyone helps each other workshop their dishes, and we help everybody like plate and execute. So that our friends have the best chance to shine, so that they're not worried about doing all of it by themselves.
Can you give us a sneak peek of what you're bringing to the menu this year?
Sure. Yeah. So I have a couple of new menu items that I've been playing around with. One is this really yummy kind of a appetizer, a mousse bouche bite. So it's a smoky sourdough that we make a baguette in our pizza oven. So it's got this beautiful smokiness that mixes with the yeast. So on that toast, we put mushroom aioli made out of porcini powder, and also a crab salad with pickled asparagus and some herbs from our microgreens garden. Yeah, so I'm really excited about that dish because there's like a lot of components going on. Yeah, lots of textures and flavors and even temperatures. So
I love that. It's kind of like all about duality in some ways, because you've got like the crab with sort of the more earthy, like, you know, mushroom and asparagus accents. And then, you know, you bring up the temperature. This sounds like a dish that would do well on Top Chef, honestly.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. You know, we really try to make sure that every bite is, you know, something that you will want to eat when you're high, you know, because when you're high, what cannabis helps with is enhancing all of our senses and making us more present in savoring those bites. You know, it's not just about flavor, it's texture, it's sight. We eat with our eyes and the smell. So, you know, knowing that folks are there to engage with their senses and be more present in that savoring moment, we just want to make sure every bite has so many beautiful flavors. And also, like, you know, playing off of the different terpenes that you get in the pairings. You know, a lot of folks think that when you come to one of these dinners, that you're just eating food to get high, and it's so much more than that. You know, it's and oftentimes we don't even put infusion in every dish, because sometimes the experience that we want to part of the folks to partake in is the pairing. You know, very similar to how a sommelier would do wine pairing. You would, you know, have the flowers that pair with different dishes. So you want to also find complementary flavors between the flower people are smoking and the food that you're pairing it with.
That's really interesting. In that dish you just outlined, where is there any infusion that comes in?
So we're still deciding. We're still deciding if that's a dish we want to do infusions or if that's a dish we want to do pairings. But I think I'm leaning towards infusions just because, like, there's actually some really nice flavors that can be even more enhanced when you have the right infusion from the flower that shares those kind of terpenes, you know, like the mushroom earthiness. And there's like yuzu and the creme fraiche that we mixed it with the crab salad. So, you know, some citrusy, limonene type of terpenes will be really beautiful. So, yeah, I think that's the direction we're going towards.
Damn, color me intrigued. Okay, look, we're going to talk a lot more about all of this sort of notion of pairings and how you actually work with cannabis in your cuisine. But first, I want to quickly just zoom out and learn a little bit more about Wendy. Where did you grow up?
So I was actually super privileged to be able to grow up in the city of Chengdu in Sichuan province. And I say privileged because Sichuan as a whole, the province, it has such an incredible culture. And I'm such a big advocate of the food from my hometown. I just think it's like the best, you know, that I've ever had. And I travel a lot, but nothing is like food from Chengdu. And Sichuan has also like such a foodie culture that there's no real concept of a foodie, because just by existing, you are one, you know, whether it's cooking the food or having opinions about where to eat the food, how to eat the food. Like, people are just very opinionated about their food where I come from. And to grow up in that kind of environment, you're always just like thinking about food. You're always overanalyzing it and also enjoying it. There's such a culture of leisure too. Because, you know, when you look at like a big city like a Shanghai or Beijing, not that Chengdu isn't big. Chengdu is also very big, but it's not the like those metros where when you look at the skyline, all you see is like skyscrapers. You look at the Chengdu, you know, skyline, you see skyscrapers and, you know, big buildings on one side and all the commerce. But then you also see this beautiful, incredibly beautiful backdrop of lakes and pagodas and willow trees and parks and tea houses, people sitting all along the river, having like tea and hanging out and playing mahjong and playing cards. Like, leisure time is just so important in our culture, which also, you know, very much coincides with the food. So, you know, when I started traveling in China after growing up in Chengdu, I was like, oh, wow, this is a really unique, special place, because not everywhere in China, you know, the different regions, they don't all share those similar values and culture. So, you know, even moving to America and, you know, doing what I'm doing now, so much of it is inspired by the place where I grew up.
So tell me about, so you, I love what you just said, that like, there's no concept of being a foodie, like in Chengdu, like everyone is sort of like connected to their food. So was that sort of just second nature to you? Like, you were always like curious about what you were eating, appreciative, like it was an important part? Or was there perhaps, or was there something that really made an influence or a mark on you besides just that Chengdu culture?
Oh yeah, for sure. So I would say definitely my grandpa. He, you know, was everybody in my family cooks, and they're all pretty good. But grandpa is like the lead chef. So, you know, when I was growing up there, well, one, he did own a restaurant at one point, and but when I was growing up, he already exited the business. And but every weekend we would all gather, all the family, all the cousins and uncles and aunts all gather at grandpa's house, and we eat a big family meal every weekend. And so me as a child always, you know, participating in that and watching that happen, you know, it was so clear to me that, you know, what the beautiful food magic that grandpa's creating in the kitchen is what's causing everybody to come gather together and share this time together. So just the power of being able to bring people together over good food was so appealing to me. You know, I'm like, I want to play that role. That's something I want to bring to my family and my friends and my community. That, and also, you know, just the way that we traveled and vacationed as a kid, we would go to these like farm bed and breakfast places that are all over the outskirts of Chengdu in Sichuan province, and have these like beautiful 10 course meals made from whatever that farm specialty is. But it was never this like really bougie thing where it was like unaffordable or overly fancy and stuffy. It was always very welcoming, inviting, but so elevated in the way that not through formality, but just how special and connected the people were on the farm with what they were producing and how they wanted to present it in those kind of, you know, 10 course meals, because those 10 course meals were always like family style too. So it was very inviting. But through doing that, you know, like we would go to like chicken farms, like fish farms and just different things like that. You know, I just got to see how like where my food came from and the kind of passion and love and care that people put into it. It just made me appreciate it so much more. And so when I moved to the United States, it was actually a huge culture shock, not in terms of like, you know, learning the language or anything like that. Like that was pretty easy to pick up as a kid. But what was a culture shock to me is how disconnected people are, you know, having gone from a place where people were so connected with where their food came from and how it's made and understanding their terroir and how that feeds into the taste and production of things. You know, just felt so disconnected in America, where, you know, I would go out to eat with friends and they would get freaked out about, you know, seeing a whole fish on a plate, and they're like, ooh, I don't know if I can eat that because, you know, I can see the eyes on the fish. I'm like, you should want to see eyes on fishes. You know, you should be worried if there are no eyes on the fish. And how is it that eyes on a fish freaks you out, but chicken in the shape of dinosaurs is not, you know, like dino nuggets, no one's questioning those, but yet we're questioning fish with eyes. So, you know, I was just like, yeah. So I'm just like, you know, how do we get people to feel, you know, because especially if you're going to be a meat eater, you're going to be a fish eater, you know, and of these things that were alive, you should feel more connected to it. You should, you know, honor the fact that, you know, like we have to slaughter animals and we have to, you know, do fishing to be able to produce that, you know?
Totally. So, I mean, it sounds like you've always, you know, from the time that you saw the magic power that your grandfather had in bringing everybody together, and even in just this like perceptiveness that you brought around connection with food, like, you've always seemed to be attracted to this world. But when did you finally make the decision, like, no, actually, this is what I want to do as a profession?
Over 10 years ago, about 10 years ago, I had just gone out of college where I was constantly hosting weekly dinners and with my friends and my roommates and also some of my friends who were in frats. They were like, oh, you want to, you know, cook for our Sunday dinners. So I had a little practice of like hosting dinners for friends and families. And then after graduation, I was kind of like, oh man, should I go to culinary school or should I just like start getting some experience in a more professional setting? And one of my chef mentors, Jason Fuller Love, he was like, yeah, you know, like the best way to learn is just on the job. So he was like, I know your food is already good. It's just about sharpening your skills. So go, you know, stage at my restaurant. So then, you know, I was like kind of learning the ins and outs of how to run kitchen operations. And I ended up doing my first big pop-up, which I called Pepper Corner. And it was with this group called Dinner Lab that would put on monthly pop-ups that feature different chefs. And for mine, it was a concept of Southern food, like American Southern food. Because when I moved to America, we moved to Memphis. So I fell in love with soul food and barbecue. But I also, you know, love the food I grew up with. So I created kind of a fusion menu of like Southern barbecue, but with Sichuan spices and flavors and things like that. So that was my first pop-up concept, and it was 110 people. So, you know, go big or go home.
That's no joke. Like most pop-ups are like, you know, I opened in my backyard and sold a few smash burgers to like my aunt, but you're like, no, I did it.
Yeah, and you know, it was really crazy, really intense, but there's something about people who are just into that that draws, you know, chefs to the industry, where yes, it's high intensity, high pressure, but then you feel so alive being a part of a team where everyone's playing a part and we are making something happen in this moment. You know, it's like a flash mob of some sort, you know, where you just feel a part of something bigger and pulled off a big production and made people full and happy.
So how did cooking with cannabis enter your consciousness?
Actually, it's kind of a funny story because like in college, you know, I was like already super into weed, especially because I went to college at USC in California. So coming from Tennessee weed to California weed, I was like, wow, this is amazing. Yeah, it's like if you didn't like it back then, you definitely like it now, because it's just so, it was, I don't know, like when I moved, I was like, wow, this is like really, really amazing, because it didn't, you know, back home, like in Memphis, we just smell like weed. But in California, when I first moved here, I was like, wow, this one smells like flowers. This one smells like a citrus orchard. This one smells like dirt and earthiness. Just, you know, there were distinct scents and there was such a cool culture around California, sun-grown craft cannabis that really produced such beautiful flowers with such distinct flavor profiles. So I was already a lover of weed in college, and, you know, we were always smoking a lot with me and my friends and my roommates and stuff. And then one day we decided to make pot brownies because, you know, classic. And at the time, back then, we did not have the kind of education we know now about dosing. So, you know, we were like, oh, well, you know, when we buy weed, we buy an eighth. Why not just put an eighth in, you know, a pan of brownies? And knowing what I know now, you know, the way that you inhale and combustion of the flower versus extracting it for infusion, you know, hits you much differently. Even just like digesting THC in cannabis is a very, very different effect, much more intense on your body than, you know, smoking it. So, you know, needless to say, we were like, you know, totally couch locked. And, you know, everybody has had that experience, I feel like, where you're like, ooh, I ate some mystery edible and now I'm here. And so after that, you know, I didn't do edibles for a really long time because like what a lot of people say is like, oh, you know, I tried it once and it's not for me because it was, you know, I had a bad time. And then around legalization, recreational legalization in California, you know, all these new products started popping onto the market. And there have been a couple of books and shows around cooking with cannabis. And I started learning all these different ways to precision dose. And that's what got me interested because I'm like, hey, now we can actually curate the experience people want. You know, how do I get educated and knowledgeable enough to curate these kind of experiences so people are not feeling what I felt when I overdosed myself on my own brownies? And actually get the kind of effect and enjoyment they want out of it. And that's kind of the thinking behind the name Drizzle too, is, you know, when I first started doing these kind of pop-ups, I wanted to keep the infusion separate and, have the sauces be dosed as a way to teach people how to dose themselves. You know, it's like, here's, you know, a tablespoon of the sauce is 2.5 milligrams. What does 2.5 milligrams feel like versus 5 milligrams versus, you know, 10? So then people can start to get a gauge of what their dose is and the kind of intended effect. And also, like, it gives a way for people to opt out of it. Because then that way, you know, you're creating a gathering that's not just for stoners. You're creating a gathering that is about people across the spectrum of being canna curious and being cannabis enthusiasts. And it makes it feel a little bit less scary and demystifies that, you know, hey, this is like just a like-minded community of people who are all trying to learn and connect over this plant medicine that's beneficial to us.
That makes total sense. So we heard about the brownies and the sort of like quote unquote failure there, if you will. Although, you know, never say failure because that was a learning experience, right?
But exactly. I learned a lot from that experience.
Yeah, I bet you did. More ways than one, probably. What about when you started, you know, getting into cannabis forward cooking after legalization? What were some of the early dishes you made that you were like, whoa, I actually like, there could be a future here?
For sure. Yeah. So I just tried to use the plant in all different kinds of ways. So, you know, there was one dish that I made that you can kind of see it in the beginning reels of Chop 420 and during like the my intro. And it's this beautiful lamb dish that I spice with mala spice, which is a Sichuan peppercorn and Sichuan chili blend with cumin. It's really delicious and it goes great with lamb. But those peppers also share a lot of chemistry with cannabis. And then so it's like, okay, this is going to be a really good effect to put these peppers with an infused dish together. And so I it's a grilled lamb rack with those spices. But then I also coat a crust of Parmesan, panko, and cannabis leaf. So, and then I stick it in the oven. So what that does is it seals in more of that umami flavor, even from the Parmesan. And then the panko gets all crusted and very crispy. So you're adding some textural element to the juicy lamb chops. And then the cannabis leaf, you know, adds like the earthiness. So I actually kind of just like grind it up into together with the panko and the parmesan. And so all those flavors kind of meld together. Like, you don't taste it. You're not going to eat it and be like, oh, I taste sweet leaf in this. But you are going to eat it and you're going to be like, wow, what are all these flavors? You know, like, how is this so complex? And, you know, and I think that dish really helps to showcase just what you can do with different ways that you can incorporate cannabis and what you can do with it. So, yeah, that's one that I definitely played around with and was like one of my signature dishes for a while.
I love that. That sounds like something I would love to try at some point. So you mentioned Chopped 420 a few times, and our listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with Chopped, you know, the famous show on the Food Network where you get the mystery box and you have to make something out of it. You got on the show Chopped 420 on Discovery Plus. How did that come about?
So there was like a casting agent who reached out to me, probably from seeing all the different things that I post about my events on social. And so, you know, you go through the audition. At the time, they don't tell you it's Chopped, and I just know it's some kind of cannabis cooking show. And so we're auditioning, and then this was during pandemic too, so, you know, it was like weird times, you know, not really a time where I'm like thinking about being on TV at all. And then 2 to 3 weeks, I think, before the actual filming, I find out it's Chopped. And then at that point, I'm like, oh, should I do this? Is this, you know, I watched Chopped before. It looks so intense. Like, is this going to be fun or is it just going to be crazy stressful? Turned out to be both. I went out to Palm Springs. That's where we filmed, because they couldn't do it in their regular studio because it was COVID time and their studio in New York is indoors. So they actually built this really cool outdoor kitchen stadium in Palm Springs. And I love cooking outdoors way more than I love cooking indoors. And I feel like it kind of fit with the cannabis theme too. Because in addition to the mystery box, which was called the stash box on the show, they had this, right? It's so cute. They just can't help themselves with all the cute puns.
I have to go back and watch this season. I can only imagine the puns that the hosts use throughout it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, Ron Funches, who's now a friend too, you know, he's hilarious and yeah, he's great with that. On the show, we had this thing called the greenhouse. So it was basically like, you know, the structure that's built like a greenhouse. And in it, they have different cannabis plants. So you can literally go in and, you know, use the leaves, use the flowers, use, you know, all parts of the actual plant. And it's stocked with all these different products. I mean, you got like apple cider vinegar that's infused, you got infused sugar, infused sriracha, infused everything, just like every kind of product you can find out there, they had it in the greenhouse. So in addition to using all the stash box ingredients, you also had to make use of ingredients from the greenhouse.
That's cool. And so did the stash box already contain some like infused elements as well, or just dependent?
No, it was all independent. So it's just like regular Chopped where, you know, it's a couple of very random things. We got chocolate denture as one of the items. It was basically a candy chocolate in the shape of dentures.
I was gonna ask you if that's what it was, but I was like, I don't want to sound stupid, but yeah, that's weird.
I know. I'm like, what is this? Is this really an actual item? But it was funny. It was really fun.
I just love thinking of the judges being like, you know what, great dish, but honestly, I just didn't get enough of the chocolate dentures.
Right. It's like, I got the chocolate notes, but the denture notes are not coming through enough.
Just really missing. Yeah, really muted. Yeah. You ended up doing pretty well in this competition, right?
I did. I ended up winning, which I did not expect. I was the youngest and probably the least experienced in terms of professional kitchen experience. But I think it was the unique flavors and the storytelling and the within the day it's for TV. So, it is important that you focus on not just the taste, but also how you present the dish and the storytelling and the incorporation of the cannabis products, and that kind of takes into consideration to your overall scoring.
Do you remember what your winning dish was?
So there were three different rounds. So the dessert round is the one, where it's between the two finalists, and I did a Neapolitan Napoleon, which is like a mouthful. But basically it's like a it's kind of like a three-layer puff pastry dessert. And I used the cannabis leaves, and I created like a can of sugar on top, almost like a Pop-Tart looking thing. And one layer had ketchup, chocolate, caramel. I know it sounds gross, but it was actually really, really good.
Was that, I'm
'Cause
guessing that was one of the stash box ingredients.
yeah, definitely.
That's creative because it's got a high sugar content, so making caramel out of it is makes sense.
Exactly. And there's really good caramel. Also has a hint of that tartness at the end. The ketchup, acidity in the ketchup also helps to like bring that out. So it sounds weird, but it totally works. So yeah, one layer had that, and one layer had cookies and cream, and one layer had strawberry verbena cream. So it was like a Neapolitan flavor. But Napoleon's the dessert, which is like three layer puff pastry.
That's a great. And how did you get the flour or the wheat in there?
The sugar. So I made the can of sugar
Oh, yeah.
topping on top, and then I also used some infused apple cider vinegar, I want to say, and maybe the strawberry sauce. Yeah, it's been a minute, but I think I try to infuse it in different ways as much as possible. Like in the second course, I made like a couple of tacos. It was like tacos three ways. And one of the tacos had cannabis smoked cotija cheese in it, and I actually created the smoker myself, like out of just like a pot, and then I got like some cannabis flowers and created some smoke, and then captured it in the pot with the cheese to give it some extra earthy funk.
That is genius and wild. Honestly, I would love to try that sometime. Well, sounds like you absolutely deserve to win that. So let's talk a little bit about more about Drizzle, your catering company. So what's I understand that there's sort of like there's more to it than just the food, right? There's also the intention about bringing people together. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
For sure. Yeah. So, I kind of alluded to it earlier with the trying to make the events inclusive, not just for seasoned stoners, but for people who just, are kind of curious, who want to have this like destigmatized, not in the weed closet kind of experience. 'Cause a lot of times, we take for granted how easy, like especially those of us who are in the industry, right? It's just like weeds everywhere, it's always around. There is like such a sense of abundance, whether it's you growing it or sharing it with friends, it's just always there. Like we don't really like have that kind of stigma within the industry. But then when you think about just the average consumer, like a mom who is like, stressed out and takes it for stress relief, she probably has to like hide it because most people in her circles are going to judge her for that. So, when we do these kind of events, it's about bringing people together and creating not just like a shared meal and a good time, but I want people to leave with a sense of connectedness to each other and and cannabis, which is why we built this beautiful space where we're growing heirloom Asian vegetables next to the cannabis plants. So people can literally visually see it's just another plant, it's just another ingredient, another herb. And they're actually sharing a lot of terpenes and, you know, cross-pollinating and things like that. So so that's definitely part of it is, you know, destigmatizing, creating new associations that are in this vibey experience, vibey environment, so that it's changing the narrative and associations for people that are more negative, that are more stigmatized. Because people shouldn't feel bad about consuming something that's helping them. So that's definitely part of it. But another part of it is, you know, I want people to also feel empowered to navigate their own consumption journey. Because, you know, even me, like I'm constantly evolving how the different forms of cannabis I take, the amount, the frequency, you know, you should be. It's a very powerful plant and we have to respect it. And so, you know, you just because you're smoking a lot now, maybe you won't. That won't work for you later on in your life or whatever it is, you know, different life circumstances and life goals change and just everybody's body is very different. So I would love for people to come and learn more about how and feel like, oh wow, I am more curious. I should feel I should explore more nuanced relationship with the plant. And what are the best ways for me to enjoy it?
Yeah. So what kind of events are you hosting at the moment? Is it folks coming to you and being like, hey, we'd love to host a dinner, or are you ideating, you know, thematic dinners and then tickets go on sale? I'm curious. I basically am asking, how do I get an invite to one of these dinners?
Well, you can come through anytime, you know, but I do a little bit of both. So, some are ticketed, and a lot of those ticketed ones is me and some other chef collaborators wanting to introduce a new concept or a new theme, or we just want to play with some seasonal ingredients and do a seasonal kind of dinner. So those usually are ticketed, and I always post about them on my social. So, you know, if you follow me, you'll be able to hear all the announcements. And those are really fun because, you know, the different characters and the different expressions from different chefs, it changes. So every pop-up, it's going to be different. Even this 420, you know, on 420, we're doing the dinner with the Chop folks. But then the next day, I'm also doing a wake and bake brunch with Chef Kendra, who's a new chef collaborator that I met. And so that one's going to be a totally different vibe, you know, just being a brunch. So, I love the thematic dinners, you know, it's crazy how you can just start talking about a vision and then you see it come to life. You know, there's so many moving pieces, but that's just all the more opportunities to get creative with curating the experience. But people also, you know, hire me to do, at different private events, whether it's individuals or brands. I actually work with quite a bit of, do a lot of brand work because, you know, as brands are introducing new products to the market, they want consumer feedback and they also want to market it through these experiences. Because if you think about the different marketing channels for brands right now, it's very difficult, very limited, because it's still federally illegal. You know, none of the big sites that serve up ads like your Facebooks and Googles and your Instagrams of the world, like they're like in most platforms are not friendly. You know, even like a Substack where you would think it's such a close circle because you have your subscribers, even that is like very much not cannabis friendly. So, you know, a lot of creators and brands struggle with being shadow banned or being blocked on cannabis and or on Instagram for posting cannabis content. Even when you follow the guidelines, sometimes they can just still be very target it. And so they don't really have that many channels for advertising and marketing and getting the word out there about their products and getting the folks to try their products. So the events are a great way for brands to do that. So I love doing that kind of work because, you know, the brand basically comes and they're like, hey, this is the product. These are the product benefits. Here's who it's for. You know, how do we create an experience around that? And I love a creative brief.
What's one of your favorite events of the, maybe with a brand or that somebody, or that you've had to, you've come up, or one of the collaborations you've done with other chefs? What's one of the favorite ones you've ever done?
Yeah, that's
not to put you on the spot.
Because there's so many good ones. So I guess maybe one of our Mogu Magu events. Me and another creator in this space, Christina, her handle is Fruit and Flower. She's an amazing baker, also another Asian lady, and we became really close friends, and we started hosting these gatherings called Mogu Magu. So Mogu means sounds like mushroom in Chinese. Mm. And then Magu is the hemp goddess of Taoism. So It kind of translates to like your mushroom weed auntie. And so, yeah, and that's what we want the gatherings to feel like, you know, like you're going to your cool mushroom weed auntie's house. And so one of the events, we were celebrating it was Mid-Autumn Festival. Mm. Mid-Autumn Festival is a time when families come together. It's kind of like our Thanksgiving, but obviously with different history than the American Thanksgiving. But it is a time in the fall around harvest where families unite, and it's very much about that. So we threw a party where we did an outdoor screening of Everything Everywhere All at Once, which was like one of my favorite movies of that year. And we did a outdoor concession stand. And the concession stand had all kinds of chips and snacks, like your movie favorites. But then within that, we also put in like, wheat gummies and mushroom gummies and, you know, different products that you can like, that fits within those categories. So it's already so organically there, and people can just go grab it. Everything's labeled very clearly, so nobody, you know, overdoses, and everything was very microdosed too. And at that event, we also had a dab bar, so you can go take a dab. Student Glass was our sponsor for that event, and you know, they hosted the dab bar, and so it was really, really cool, you know, where you are at this like outdoor movie experience, which people are very into, very familiar with already. But now we're showing how cannabis can just be incorporated to these activities we already do.
Yeah, that's really cool. I love that. You mentioned earlier, you know, the conversation around stigma and, you know, sort of like how important it is for people to be able to engage in cannabis when it's something that makes them feel better. How have you found cannabis and food to be an entry point for other types of important discussions beyond stigma, or including stigma, if you want to talk more about that?
I mean, this is like going to maybe hopefully not too dark of a turn, but, you know, I've definitely had friends reach out to me when someone in their circle, a loved one, is going through cancer treatment, you know, going through chemo and things like that. And it's often people who, you know, didn't even think about cannabis as a solution until, you know, that kind of dire need. And then at that point, they're like, well, I don't know what I should be taking. There's so many products out there, so many different types of dose. And I also want to be careful because, you know, chemo is very serious, and adding another, you know, psychoactive plant medicine to it, you know, you gotta just be really responsible. So, you know, obviously those folks cannot smoke because, you know, combustion and all that can be very carcinogenic and not great for the chemo process. And a lot of times it's edibles that is helping to soothe a lot of those symptoms. So I think, you know, from a health and wellness perspective, like that's a really, really important topic, is like, how do we free more access and more information for folks to make the right decisions when it comes to this, especially because they're probably not getting that kind of education and knowledge from their doctors. You know, mm-hmm. the medical field has, you know, carried their own stigma around the plan. And because of that, and because of, you know, how research is done in this country, especially at, like, you know, public universities that are funded by federal money, a lot of that research does not happen. So, you know, it's like we have like a barrier to the knowledge gathering and to the knowledge sharing. So mm-hmm. I really hope that, you know, changes more. It's beginning to change, but I would love to see that change even more when it comes to, you know, the research and the medical field, destigmatizing so people can get the options and alternatives to opioids that they need.
Yeah, well, you know, folks like you are doing the work to raise awareness, which I feel like is always one of the first steps in any process, right? So that's really cool. You know, you mentioned the sort of like healing power and the connection between medicine. And in some of the interviews I've read that you've given, you've talked about a desire to reclaim the connection between plant medicine and wisdom and Chinese medicine and ancestral wisdom, that there's a real powerful connection there. Can you talk a little bit about that?
For sure. You know, in my journey with Christina in building Mogu Magu, we started digging into our own culture's past. And what we found out is actually cannabis was founded in China, in like Western China kind of region. And then you think about, wow, this is actually from our culture. And it used to be, you know, kind of thought of as part of Chinese, one of the, you know, different herbs within Chinese medicine, to now it's, you know, very much illegal and very punishable with very severe sentencing and things like that in China. Just how far we've strayed from the initial wisdoms that we had. So, you know, we wanted to bring that back and reclaim that. And, you know, because there's so many Asian smokers in the closet, you know, and even my friends who are Asian who work in the industry, a lot of times they're not even out of the closet with their family. So, you know, it kind of starts with us too. So, you know, I want to create alternative stories. I want to create alternative narratives, you know, showcasing that this plan has existed in our history and it has been used to heal people in the past, just like other principles of traditional Chinese medicine. And it can continue to do so, you know. So in learning about different plant medicine outside of cannabis too, how they all can function together to heal specific ailments, you know.
It's so interesting. It feels like such a natural, like, inclusion to be included in sort of like, you know, plant-based healing. And I think it's the real damage we've done as a society, I'm talking about Western society, like, especially as well, in terms of like branding this as a drug. I kind of blew my mind that like this wasn't illegal. Like, marijuana wasn't illegal until the 1930s, and it was only classified a class one drug since the 1970s, which was not, it blew my mind. You kind of just always assume like, okay, well, people just must have always started from the place of this is bad, and now we're sort of like learning that it's actually not, it's actually good, and we can embrace it as that. But even the phenomenon of it being branded as something harmful and dangerous is relatively recent in human history. I found that to be kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it really kind of makes you ask, who's benefiting? You know, who is benefiting from the lack of production, lack of distribution, lack of access to plant medicine? And, you know, I think a lot of misinformation contributed to these stigmas and created fear, which is why I think, you know, having the research, having knowledge, having more alternative narratives to those, you know, misinformation that was spread is what's going to help combat that. You know, the logging company for, or the logging industry, for example, right? They didn't want cannabis to be, or really hemp to be legal, because it's much more sustainable to grow and it's much more longer lasting as a product than wood. And then you have the pharmaceuticals who has tried to, you know, synthesize the cannabis on an atomic level in a lab. But like, why even go through the trouble of doing that when we have a plan that literally does that, you know? But of course, right, you're going to go back to who benefits from it being, because, you know, you can't patent a plan, but you can patent a pharmaceutical drug.
If you can probably sell it at a higher margin if you're making it in your lab and it's all, again, done in the name of profit, right?
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, kind of going back to your point about how Western medicine and Western perspective has kind of really missed the point on this, is you can't isolate these compounds to just one thing. You know, it's not just THC that's helping. It's not just like, you know, it's the whole, what we call the entourage effect of the full spectrum cannabis, because there's so much we don't even know about it. You know, like, I think people are mostly familiar with CBD, THC, but there's so many other cannabinoids, you know, ones that we haven't even really discovered too. And what those each individual, like cannabinoids target, you know, some are better for sleeping, some are better for, you know, eating and so on. So, there's just so much more to learn. And you can't really just reproduce that in a lab the way that there, you know, there's something magical about what the sun does to produce that entourage effect. And so, you know, I'm a huge proponent of regenerative farming practices and sun-grown craft cannabis. You know, it's kind of like the difference between fresh squeezed orange juice and Simply Orange and Tang, you know, and people, you know, should know those kind of distinctions so they can make the choices that best fits for them.
One thing, you know, picking up on this notion of who's benefiting, right? Now that cannabis is legal, we've seen it experience some of the highs and lows of capitalism. And I'd say a lot of lows, you know. We're seeing new cannabis food and drink concepts, often bankrolled by wealth and often white people, pop up all the time, creating some of the similar power structures we've seen in other industries in a brand new industry, right? How does that come into conflict with the need for continued community-based work and education that you're speaking, you know, about, and that you say is so highly needed right now at this point in sort of like cannabis's lifetime in our society?
I mean, I think it comes in direct conflict, you know, because the people who are profiting and benefiting and gatekeeping were not here pioneering the industry. They were not here to, you know, facilitate any of that. You know, it's an industry that was built on the backs of brown and black folks who, you know, a lot of them are still even, you know, incarcerated, while, you know, these white folks coming in, especially from like the Wall Street side, and like to just invest when they were just a few years ago lobbying against legalization. So, you know, when you have that kind of intention into a plant medicine, it's just, it ruins it. It's missing the whole point. And you're also losing so much of those kind of ancestral wisdoms, you know, because of the lack of research and knowledge, so much of what we do know and best practices are passed down by families, you know, by aunties and grandmas and people like that who've always kind of like secretly grown. And there is a lot of wisdom in that, that we are just throwing away in even the marketing narratives. And then not to mention just the incredible bias and discrimination against women, and especially women of color, you know, like Black women specifically, like, and it's so hard for them to get the proper funding and the proper resource in the time of day for capital that's floating into the industry, even though they are showing that their businesses outperform. You know, it's like, it's not merit-based whatsoever. It's incredibly biased and a lot of nepotism. You know, I'll give you an example. There, a couple years ago, I did an event. Actually, that was maybe one of my favorite events too, now that I think back to it. So it was the opening of Josephine and Billy's, which is a Black women-owned, I think they were one of the first Black women-owned dispensaries in LA, you know, backed by Jay-Z and all these big names. And the founders, Whitney, she's amazing. She's so about education. In fact, she does, you know, these different educational pop-ups at her store, free to attend for folks who just want to learn more. And the store is beautiful. So they did this big launch party and I helped cater it. And it was like 1920s prohibition themed. So everyone was like dressed to the nines, so beautiful, so gorgeous, and really fancy. And then I made like barbecue ribs. So it was such a visual of like high lows, where you have like, you know, Whitney in this beautiful dress, and she was just like, you know, eating ribs. It was my Memphis barbecue ribs that I did.
Peppercorn ribs?
Yes, actually, yeah. Those ones from the pop-up made a comeback. And so folks were like smoking blunts, eating ribs while dressed the nines. It was such a good vibe. But anyway, so, you know, I've been kind of keeping up with her business and just seeing her do all the right things and creating a really great retail experience, doing right by, you know, the industry with all the educational, free educational resources that she gives to folks. But, you know, it's such a uphill battle too, you know, just because you're doing all the right things and people like what you're providing, you're still getting hit with like, you know, not great like business practices. Like maybe, you know, somebody's charging you more for XYZ because you're a small business and you don't have leverage like these big multi-state operators do, that are well-funded with Wall Street money. You know, so it really has, I would say, you know, everything we're talking about here and the overemphasis on capitalism versus community care has really destroyed a lot of California cannabis, you know, and it's like sad vibes because there's so many people who are so passionate about building the industry here, but it is just so, so tough, you know, for the small businesses that have been here all along ushering in all these positive changes. And you see more of the whoever has the more money is who wins. It's not who is doing the right thing. And that's, you know, that really bums me out, which is why, you know, I try to amplify and highlight those who are doing the right things. So, you know, consumers are educated with the choice, you know, and knowing that where they spend their dollars, how they shop, really, really helps to shape the future of this industry too.
Yeah. Well, you've already done an excellent job of highlighting some vendors that you have the utmost respect for, but are there any other sort of vendors? And I'm thinking, you know, particularly, you know, folks who are sort of in the food space as well, that you think are doing a good job and people who are listening to this podcast should go out and check out and support?
Yeah. I mean, like one of my favorite flower brands is Moo Made Farms. They're up in Humboldt. Tina Gordon, she's the founder, and she comes down here to do market visits, but also to support a lot of our community oriented events, especially for Mogu Magu. You know, she's all about sun grown regenerative cannabis, and they have such high quality flowers. I'm obsessed. I'm always like joking with them about making their flower terpenes like profiles into like candles or perfumes because they just smell so damn good. And so it's just such, that's like the fresh orange juice, you know, fresh squeezed orange juice of cannabis. But what's interesting is, you know, you don't find her product in a lot of stores in SoCal. You know, she's only in 5 dispensaries in LA. Not because she doesn't want to be in more, but there's just not that culture and market for sun-grown cannabis in LA. You know, people care about, people want curated things. People want high-end things, but I think they care more about designer than craft. And there's such a big difference. And I think part of it is just they don't know, you know, so much of the brands and the brand stories are not about that. And there's not as much, but you know, it doesn't mean that we can't create it. So I definitely want to give a shout out to Moonmade and, you know, if they're, I know by us in the Northeast side, they are carried in Rise and Cornerstone. So, you know, if you want to impress some picky wee people, you know, stock that at your house.
That's funny. Noted.
Yeah. Yeah. I really, really, really love them. And then other products. I really like beverages. You know, I really like this brand called Artet. They are very micro, like low dose. So most of their drinks are like 1-to-1 ratio, 5 milligram THC to 5 milligram CBD. But what I really love what they've done with the brand is, you know, again, I really like brands who are like kind of building the association to destigmatize by tying it to some kind of experience or lifestyle product that people already enjoy. And their branding is very much kind of that, like a spritz aperitif, you know, very vibey drinks, like something you would have with like a charcuterie board or something. And it's very beautiful. They have even like a big bottle, you know, that you can have on display that looks very beautiful. And I like recommending beverages to people, especially going back to, you know, what we were talking about with folks going through chemo and things like that. Because beverages are so much easier on your system and on your digestion than even food. So, you know, I really like it. I really want to see beverage cannabis in general as a category blow up more. I think there's a lot of challenges with distribution and distribution points. And of course, you know, all the federal you know, limitations like being illegal really stops, I think halts like the growth that the category could have. I'm actually a judge for the LA Spirit Awards for the cannabis category. So, you know, I get to kind of see what, you know, beverage trends are out there for it. So it's an exciting category to watch and I'm rooting for cannabis beverages.
That's exciting. I didn't even know that that was a category in it. I'll have to look out for that. Well, we'll be sure to link all of those brands that you mentioned in the show notes so people can find them easily. Last question that we ask all our guests, Wendy, when you look back on your career so far and on your journey, what are you most proud of?
I think maybe this sounds funny to say, but I'm really proud of myself. You know, I'm really proud of the person that I've become. You know, I've been really working on myself to, be that version of myself. And I know I'm doing a good job because I look around at my circle and who's in my community. That's why I'm proud of myself. It's like for being the kind of person that I am, that's attracting the kind of people that are in my life now. You know, I'm so appreciative of just the kind of people who want to break down stigma, who are so about community care, who are also on a path to better themselves and lift up everybody collectively. I feel like there's so much divisiveness in the world, so much violence, so much darkness. It's so important that we find joy, you know, and we are in community with others to do that together. I think, you know, it helps to take up more space with joy and community care to combat those, you know, negative things that we are experiencing.
Totally. You know what? I fucking love that, because when I ask that question, most people are like, oh, I'm just so proud of my team. I'm so proud of, you know, like, it, you know, it's, but you know what? It's okay to like, be like, hey, I've done some hard work to be the person I am today. And it's reflected in the people I have around me. I think that's a fantastic answer. Wendy, where can people find you if they're looking for you online?
You can follow me at When You're Hungry, WENYER, Hungry, on Instagram. And you can also, you know, just shoot me an email through the website drizzle.catering. And also make sure you check out Mogu Magu, mogumagu.co, to sign up for our emailing list for all the rad Asian creative parties that we're going to have this year.
Well, we'll be sure to link it all in the show notes. But in the meantime, Wendy, thanks for joining us and happy 420.
Happy 420.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the LA Food Podcast. Thanks to our guest, Wendy, for joining the podcast and sharing so much valuable information with us. I can't wait to go check out one of her events. If you like what you heard today, dear listener, please go to wherever you listen to podcasts, leave us a rating, a review, subscribe. Seriously, all that stuff really helps. We'll be back next week with another epic episode. But in the meantime, if you're looking for me, you can find me on TikTok, Instagram, and Threads at the LA Countdown. That's THELACOUNTDOWN. You can also find me on Instagram at LA Food Pod. That's LAFOODPOD.